You've got people in charge that are still individual contributors. They may have the title, but they're still the one jumping in, rolling up their sleeves, getting into everything, not passing the baton, because when they do pass the baton, they haven't developed another person yet because they haven't been developed. And then you can't really give or put all of this on the next person because then they fail. And then what do? We take that back, right? And so now we're the one sitting here with 60-hour weeks.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Chris Barnes. He's a fractional integrator and an executive coach, a twofer, with Wolf's Edge Integrators. He's a leadership development practitioner, executive coach dedicated to empowering CEOs and executive teams to achieve peak performance. He's helping them climb mountains, figuratively. With real-world experience as a CIO and a COO, and now a fractional integrator and COO and Vistage chair, he does everything. Chris specializes in fostering transformative growth and strategic clarity. Passionate about personal and professional development, I can attest to that. He balances life through family, fitness, mindfulness, which he may take a mindfulness break during this conversation, and community involvement. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Wow, Kenny, thanks for having me. It's a heck of an introduction. I don't know if I can even follow that up with a great appearance, but I hope so.
I believe, we could just cut the episode there right there.
There we go.
Just thanks so much I'm glad I could be here, and we'll put some pictures.
Yeah.
We could, now that we have your face, we could just make an AI you saying
deep fake.
Cool
there
stuff.
We go.
Deep fake. Tell me, Chris, what is on your mind?
Well, you really just mentioned it, right? That's the whole purpose of this podcast. It's leadership, but maybe not from the traditional way of thinking about leadership, cracking a whip or all the sorts of things that are out there.
Yeah. Has there been something specific within the realm of leadership? I know in our initial conversation, like we totally nerded out over assessments and models and all these different things. But is there a particular aspect that's been capturing your attention lately?
Yeah, I think it's just this mindset and focus on symptoms and problems, right? And I know historically we've said, I'm the problem solver. I solve problems. I come in. That's right. How I lead. Right. But we look at everything like it's a problem. And we look at people like they're a problem to be fixed. And really, when you look across the spectrum of what, pick a post, it doesn't matter what post, pick any post you want.
Right.
It's focused on a symptom of a lack of leadership development.
Wow. So you think most of the problems can be boiled down to like rooted in leadership, like either poor or lack of leadership? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I try, when I'm being conscious of it, I try not to even use the terms poor and good, even though that may slip out of my mouth in this conversation. Because what I'm really focused on is developed versus undeveloped, right?
I gotcha.
I think we get...
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you see it on a spectrum? Like developed to develop?
Yes.
And it's a never-ending spectrum?
Mm-hmm. I subscribe to the Leadership Circle. It's one of the most comprehensive frameworks that I've seen on the topic. Mm-hmm. And they use a circle intentionally because... when you think about a spectrum going from left to right, it's like you're leaving one and going to the other and, oh, I'm too far over here, so I may need to go over here. The whole reason they use that circle is when you look at it, the bottom half is just kind of where we are. Maybe when we hit that first managerial spot, right? The what got you here won't get you there type thought. Yeah. And so these are still strengths that are there. These are still things that we needed to get to that point. And now... we've stunted. Our growth is stunted. In fact, their data says 75% of adults are stuck right there. So when you add to that the idea of leadership, whether you're talking about government or an organization, 75% of the adults are stuck in that reactive mode, right? And they say, this is just me. This is how I am.
Which I maintain is just the laziest excuse to act however you want. I'm just being me. I'm doing me. Like, what? No, that's dumb. You can always be better. So which I really liked that they're stuck in reactionary mode as opposed to maybe being more responsive or thoughtfully proactive towards making progress. What you were talking about makes me think of, I think the book, I know the author, not personally, Carol Dweck, about the
growth mindset.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like 75% are stuck in that fixed mindset and only 25% are making it to the growth mindset.
I'd say,
is that fair to say?
So going back to her work, I think one of the pieces I liked about her work is she's like, we all have a fixed mindset about something, right? And so it's not that somebody is completely fixed versus growth mindset, but in this aspect, it's more along the lines of like, they don't have the tools to move to the next level that they need to as a leader. So maybe some better words that I like for that are reaction, reactive versus conscious, right? So, gotcha. So this is my default behavior. It's unconscious. It's just how I show up. I've learned how to show up this way. I've needed to show up this way, whatever it's been throughout my life. And I've never interacted with somebody in a way that has shined a light on the fact that I need to now be a lot more conscious in how I show up as a leader.
Gotcha. That sleepwalking, which I subscribe to simply because of like my exposure to the Enneagram deals a lot with like we adopt personalities and we become on autopilot until usually some sort of significant life event or maybe a series of them. We get presented with the opportunity to start to build a different muscle and say, oh, maybe this has gotten me here.
Yep.
But like you're saying, won't get me to that next place. And I also definitely agree on the, like, we're fixed in some ways, growth in another. What, in your research and your experience, what helps people get to a growth mindset in an area where maybe they've previously been fixed and keep them there? They don't have to have the pedal to the floor, but you could be 1% better every day or something like that. So how do we start thinking about getting out of this fixed mindset and what really is keeping people there?
That's a very big question because
we're going to solve everything in the world today, right now.
You're talking about
the last podcast ever.
Human behavior and changing it. And it doesn't matter how good of a coach you are or parent or anything else you want to plug in there, you can't change somebody else, right? So if we want to see change, we draw a circle around ourselves and we change everything within that circle. Mm-hmm. The problem is when you're talking about an organization or a government, whatever, right? You're dealing with other people. And if they don't want to see it, you can help them see it. You know, you can shine, mm-hmm, you can put that mirror up for them, but then it's like, okay, so what? You go into many organizations, they go through the process of doing a 360. People see the results of that 360 and they see what words were said about them. They look at the positive, then they look at the perceived negative, or maybe it really is pretty negative, and that's where they dwell, right? And so for some people, that tension and discomfort turns into, I've got to improve. I want to improve. But for a lot of people, going back to the point you made, it's, this is just who I am.
Gotcha. Do you think it's an openness to examine yourself, receive feedback, or to look in the mirror? That could help move people off of that? Because I agree with you. You can't change anybody. Even though, like, there's still some times I'm still trying. I'm like, if you would just listen to me and do what I tell you, your life would be so much better.
So I hope that is not just with your wife that you do that.
Oh, no, I gave up on that with her a long time ago. She's her own creature. It could be my kids.
Yeah.
Which are getting up into the teenage
years.
And then, of course, I'm the dumbest human who ever walked the planet, but with them. But it might even be clients or friends, like, and it's not coming from a malicious place or anything. But I do think it creates that expectation that and a gap in between your expectation and reality. You become frustrated with trying to change something you can't. Mm-hmm. But do you think that there can be inciting incidences that allow somebody or trigger somebody out of that sort of like sleep. I'm starting to think of The Matrix because I really am a nerd. So let's take it all the way back to 1999.
I'm glad you used that analogy, actually, and I'll tell you why in a second.
But, you know, you're getting unplugged. You start looking around like, what has to happen for someone to be in the space to reconsider and even hear feedback, like on a 360, where they see, here's the negative, here's the positive. Because I find that people who aren't open to the negative, generally, they don't even really accept the positive.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
They may like it. It may sound good for a hot second, but it doesn't, none of it sticks the landing in a bad way. Not like I'm confident in who I am. It's a, I'm ignorant and I'd like to stay that way, please. Like, I know this isn't chicken. My brain is telling me this is chicken.
Yeah.
I'm going to eat it anyway. Now we're getting into deep cuts of the Matrix. So, but take it away. I was about to call you Neo.
But so this is not meant to be a discussion about the LCP, but it is a 360, and that's why I like it. So if you ever have time to look into it, they've taken all the leadership materials that they could find going back 70 years, been thoroughly tested, and it gives you quantitative data, like how you're showing up as a leader and what that means to your effectiveness for the business. And so most of the time you're in these organizations and you're doing 360s with the leaders of the organization. If you talk to them about leadership effectiveness, this is what you're affecting right now with regard to the business. That's one way to get people's attention, right? It's not just another assessment that we brought up and all of those things. But the beauty of it is you have those words on there, right? The subjective information that's there from your reviewers. Right. But then you've got a diagram that shows you, based on the number of people you had, and then it breaks it down by group, this is where how you show up as a leader in your effectiveness. And because of this, either your organization's going to thrive or you're actually going to go backwards as an organization. Because sometimes companies succeed in spite of their leaders, right? We see it all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Those are the most baffling.
But when we're talking about in the business context, the fact that 70%+ of change or strategic plan rollout fails. And we're spending a ton of money on consultants and strategic planners and this and that, but why don't we have a better success percentage?
So from that perspective, then let me maybe challenge what you said initially about the leadership piece. And I'd be curious your thoughts is that sounds like a change management problem. Is that people, you and I are coaches. And so we're always like we're in the business of change.
Right.
And so part of our job is not just ask great questions, be well-informed, listen, all those things, the skill set. But one of the skills is like helping people navigate change management with themselves or their organization. So then is that effectiveness really down to whether or not a leader or a person in a position of authority can manage change versus actually developing themselves as leaders?
So it's both and. Change management is a component. So when you're looking at the competencies that they use that make up extraordinary leaders in that creative top half, there's 18 different ones up there.
Okay.
So change is one piece of it. And even if you look at a change management discipline like ProSci and ADCAR, that's one of the biggest ones out there, most heavily researched, right? They tell you the top two people responsible for successful change management at the head of the organization who's going to deliver the message about the change to the whole organization. The second person is that employee's immediate supervisor or manager.
So it could skip several people.
Yeah, you have to have a leadership system within the organization that starts it where it's supposed to, because everyone takes their cue from the person at the top, but it has to go through your executive leadership team and all the way down, however many levels necessary, such that the person who answers the phone that reports to the director of admin or whatever they call them, is also talking to a leader that knows how to help them navigate the change that's being implemented.
Gotcha. Because you may have the catalyst and CEO, executive director, whoever. This is what's about to happen. Here's where we are. Or here's where we've been. Here's where we are. Here's where we're going. Mm-hmm. Let me walk you through that. But that immediate manager, immediate supervisor is the person who's going to help make those incremental changes day after day.
Yeah.
So like get it started, keep it going. And we may have some milestones along the way.
Yeah. And then, and the most important question that that head of the organization answers is, why are we doing this? Why now? Mm-hmm. So they're going to make that case. And then as you get through down into the organization, they're going to be answering different questions, right? They're going to answer, what's in it for me? That's what my manager's right. going to answer yeah. for me.
Yeah.
And then training and support, all of that sort of stuff takes place before change is successfully implemented and sustained.
Gotcha. Now, within that, I'd imagine that individual contributor, how much of the success comes down to their maybe level of self-awareness, their willingness to lean in, to not just do something differently as part of the change, but show up, mm-hmm. almost be different, whether that's magnifying good qualities and minimizing negative ones. Like, how does that play a role in the overarching change? And is that sometimes where people go, yep, this is going to push me to change too much. I went off the bus.
It might.
Because any big change usually leads with includes some attrition.
Yeah. And they might, right? I had one mentor tell me it's done massive change before. He's like, look, you generally have three types of people. You have the people in their canoes that are rowing the opposite direction from you. You have the people in their canoes, but they don't have their oars in the water. They're waiting to see which way, you know, who's going to win this battle. And then you have the people that are rowing alongside you. And your job as a leader is to get as many people as you can rowing alongside you, figure out the people that are rowing against you, and help mm-hmm. them onto their next thing, whatever that is. Maybe it's a change within the organization, but maybe it's a change out of the organization. And so even for the individual contributor that you're talking about, I still put the onus of this on the leaders of the organization at all levels. So if your responsibility is that you have a person reporting to you, then you should be developed, mm-hmm. not trained. And I think that's one of the
contrast those.
Yeah. Then. One of the biggest issues that we see is we have all kinds of leadership training, right? Let's do this one day seminar. Let's do, heck, even if it's a week, whatever. They spend all this money on it. And if you think about training, one of the best analogies I had for it is think about it like a cup, right? You've got a cup, it can hold so much. So you start on day one, you're on the sales team. I'm going to give you the sales playbook. I'm going to train you on how we do sales here. I'm going to fill up your cup. Development is where I take that cup and we're going to stretch and we're going to pull it and it's going to turn into a different shape because the initial capacity you had needs to be bigger for you to do what we need you to do and be who we need you to be.
Wow. I had never thought of it that way. So if we're increasing, we're almost, and I don't hear you saying training's dumb, don't do training, do development, right? No. Like you need training, but it seems like you would need to develop, the more you develop a person, the more training you can conduct, because the more you could pour into the cup, which turns into a bucket or something like that, right? As you stretch it and you take it out. And that's where like a larger collection of skills, like if you listen to anything from Alex Hormozi, he just talks about, he goes, it all comes down to skill development. Everything's a skill. Yeah. Like spend time acquiring skills because typically they're non-perishable. No one can take them from you. Yeah. Like you just can't keep building on it, but you have to be developed in order to pour more skills into your cup, right?
I'd say yes and to that because there's skills, but skills are just one component of that. So like, I love the idea of skill stacking. I've made a career out of it.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about development, we're also talking about the inner game, that inner operating system that we are working from. because there are a lot of people with plenty of great skills, right?
Yeah. They
worked at Enron.
Yeah. Man, you know, the late '90s are really, I feel like that there needs to be some sort of title about the late '90s for this podcast.
You know, we've got stuff now even going on, right? Like, people are very skillful. They've learned these skills, but they haven't addressed that inner game that drives them and serves as the lens that they're functioning through. And so we bring people in these positions. What's the book? The Peter Principle, right? Gets a lot of talk, and it's a great book. And it says, and it, essentially it's like you get promoted to your next level or highest level of incompetence, as though it's just a skills thing there. But the reality is, the higher up you go in an organization, the more that inner game really matters. Because I've worked with enough leaders. Some of these have been partners, whatever, in organizations where they're still doing some of the tasks they would do as an individual contributor just because they can't let it go. And what message are you telling people?
At least
people?
I'm good at this. I feel uncertain here and the lack of confidence in this new thing I got promoted to, but I'm very confident in doing this minor thing, which shouldn't even be on my plate. Yep. So that sounds like a balance between character and competence, right? That inner game, which I can't remember if we talked about this in our first conversation, but the book, The Only Leaders Worth Following from Tim Spiker, in their research, it came down to, they found 8 traits or attributes of an effective leader, but 2 of them accounted for 77% of that equation, which they found interesting. And it was being inwardly sound and others focused. And those were the only 2 that described who you are as a leader, and the other 6 were what you do. And that sounds a lot like what you're saying is that being inwardly sound, the who you are, your character, as you move up in influence and position matters more and more, and maybe even more than sometimes the competencies you have.
Yeah. So what's a leader's job?
To lead.
I threw that softball.
Like Sunday school. I felt like I was in Sunday school. Jesus. That's the answer. The answer is Jesus. Okay.
No, we're supposed to get results through other people.
Helping 2 or more people accomplish a shared goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what we get graded on, if you will. And so... Mm-hmm.
Should.
The more that, yeah, or should, but in so many places, you've got people in charge, let's say, that are still really individual contributors. They may have the title, but they're still the one jumping in, rolling up their sleeves, getting into everything, and not passing the baton, because when they do pass the baton, they haven't developed another person yet because they haven't been developed. And then you can't really give or put all of this on the next person because then they fail. And then what do? We take that back, right? We take the power back.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're the one sitting here with 60-hour weeks.
Right. Just trying to cover our own butt because we're not going to let our people, our team, make us look bad to our peers and our supervisor, which may in fact be the CEO or COO or something like that. Wow. So I want to zoom in on something you said.
Sure.
A lot of people aren't developing their team members because they themselves were not the recipient of development. Mm-hmm. I've been having this very conversation with several people lately, and I'm getting more requests for some training that has to deal with, hey, you have great leaders, but they're not developing their people. And it's usually because they were sharp, scrappy, growth-minded individuals that got to where they are by being exceptional practitioners, delivering results in one capacity, but no one really like took them under their wing or done this. And like in the context of the church, my pastor's been talking about this. He's like, this is discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, but this is really hard because nobody really did that for me. And now I'm trying to break that cycle. So what do you say to leaders and leadership teams where it's like, we're not developing those under us, but it's like, I've never witnessed this. No one did this for me. And you want me to come up with this? Like, where do you even start if you've never benefited from something that is so pivotal? And it's not like, oh, you just read like a quick little pamphlet book and suddenly you're this developer of leaders. Like, it's a substantial undertaking.
Yeah, it's a process. Some people would say, just go get a mentor. The fact is, yes, mentors are very important. I've had them. And when I hear great leaders that aren't developing people, are they really great leaders?
Or are they great performers?
Yep. Yeah. I think one of the best descriptions for me, I know a lot of people use Jim Collins' Good to Great when he talks about the levels of leaders, but I like John Maxwell's, his five levels of leadership, because he talks about that level one leader, right? They come in and their title is why they're a leader.
Right.
Most people stay there.
Mm-hmm.
The next level is relationship. You developed a relationship with people and now they're really working for you. And then he talks about, I think the next one is you're competent. You do something big for the firm. And then level four is like you start creating level three leaders. Level five is something you can't actually, he's got a quiz for all of them except for level five, because that's something that someone else has to bestow on you, basically. That's like end of life type stuff.
So, that's like influence, right? Because his definition is leadership is influence, yeah, he says nothing more, nothing less.
Influence, nothing more, nothing less. Yep.
But I think that was like at the top level is then you become a person of influence or something, right?
Influence is actually down in there, three and four.
Okay.
In range. But level five is like you're creating other level four and five leaders. So that's like him.
It's almost like
he's been doing like 50 years. Yeah.
Type stuff.
Yep.
That'll outlive you.
Okay. And I think that, and one of the other things I love about it is he tells you, whenever a new person starts on your team, you're a level one leader to them. Whenever you take on a new role, you are, if you were a level four, guess what? You are a level one leader again, because it's a change in context. And the whole point is that you never just arrive and stay there. It's always in flux depending on the context that you're in. And so... Mm-hmm. So when you think about the situations that you're talking about where they're like really great at what they did, really great, that is awesome. And they got a title, maybe a little bit more money, but they didn't leave level one. Some of them maybe did and got to level two. But when you're thinking about the craziness of the world today, the business climate, the type of complexity, and the ability that leaders need to have to scale organizations or just keep them going, right? There's a level of sophistication that just isn't there for 75% of the adults. So back to your question of like, I didn't see it. It's a journey. And I will tell you from my own experience, I've never had a great boss that took me under their wing and took hiring my own executive coaches, lots of reading, mentors, leadership programs that are like a year long. There's a lot of work that goes into it. Just like if the other stuff that we want to do, you want to get in shape, you hire a personal trainer, but the personal trainer doesn't do the work for you.
Right.
You have to do the work. And so when it comes to this type of stuff, there's no wheel to reinvent. There's plenty of stuff out there. You can pick. American Icon is one of my favorite books. It's about Alan Mulally and how he turned around Ford.
Yeah.
And I base probably 90% of my leadership style off of the way that he is led.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard different stories of just things he did, said, especially early on in his tenure to turn things around, because that's when it was like the most stark contrast.
Yeah, they were going to lose, was it $17 billion, I think, that year, and then the financial crisis happened, and It went down to $1 a share and then ended up at $17 a share. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So how do you think about, or how do you coach leaders to think about maybe a ratio of development to training? Somebody's listening to this and they're like, you know what? I also never really had somebody take me under their wing, but I want to be the kind of leader who develops other leaders, other level 3, 4, maybe 5 leaders, like one day. Mm-hmm. But they want to understand, like, how do I balance this development versus training versus, like, because there are some hard asses out there who are just like, gung ho, we're doing every training we possibly can. And it's like, and no development. But I also know people who will spend a ton of time in development and not fill that bucket up with more stuff. It's just develop, reshape. And it seems like there should be a ratio or something to help kind of mark how we battle with this tension.
Yeah, I think so. I've been in that side of, oh, I'm going to do this tactic, that tactic, this tactic. And I've built a really mm-hmm. big toolbox because of it. But my executive mm-hmm. coach told me a couple of years ago, she's like, managers have tools. Leaders know how and when to use them. And so I had a shotgun approach. Like, if I read a book today, I guarantee you we were going to implement something from it tomorrow. And we were going to try all the things, try as we were growing as a company and not knowing what we were doing, not having. Yeah. And essentially what has happened over the years, it's been a multi-year process of going from a shotgun approach to a scalpel. Right.
Is that just a function of time and experience?
Yeah, partially. Yeah. Yeah. But the other part of that is if you have a great coach, which I've had, I think 6 total. And Jesse, I hope she gets to listen to this. We are now in year 5. She's the only coach I've had that's been with me for more than a year because she is so great at this very thing where I've learned from her even how I work with other people. There are ways, whether it's asking questions or pointing something out to someone, because I don't think it's a dance that needs to be consciously done as far as, am I doing training or am I doing development? Am I doing training? Or training is largely going to be dictated by the role that you're in. Pretty straightforward, right? I think when you're talking about how you're going to show up for people, so I like a definition that says leadership is the application of self to circumstances. That's talking about the inner game. And so I'm going to have, there are going to be tools. There are going to be tools that you need, and they're easy enough to find and teach and do, and that's great. But what I'm really focused on is how are you showing up? So what we'll do is, as an example, there's immunity to change. It's a framework as well. But it says, let's just start. Like, what's the one big thing that you can do to move the needle on your leadership? And it's not you get to pick it. It's you need to ask the people around you, and this needs to pass the spouse test. So when you've done that really uncomfortable work, mm-hmm. and your husband or your wife says, yeah, that's not the thing you need to work on, and you and I both know it, right? Then that's what we're going to work on for about 6 months. That's it.
Yeah.
And then we're going to take the next thing. And the next thing, and what tends to happen is as you start to grow into this more conscious leader in one or two areas, an amazing thing starts to happen where your brain starts operating in a way and you start operating in a way that you start seeing it go across the circle because the rising tide lifts all boats, so to speak. You start becoming
it's
more
like
conscious.
A compounding effect.
Yep. And you become more conscious of how you're showing up in that reactive default state. Like, that's not working. That doesn't feel right. And so to your Matrix comment, you become Neo at the end where you see the ones and zeros and everything coming at you, right? Yeah. And that's what ultimately helps you move into that more conscious creator role.
I love that. And there's a great question I heard from Ian Morgan Cron. He's an Enneagram teacher, hosts the Typology podcast, but he laid a question out. It was like, it almost seemed like a throwaway. He just said it at the end of a podcast and then closed the show. And I was like, wait, what was that? It's, what do you know about me that I don't, but I should?
Yeah.
The results and answers to that can be terrifying.
Yeah, especially if you're a reactive leader.
So if somebody's listening and they're like, you know what, Chris has made a lot of sense, Kenny, not so much, but I want to be in that 25%. I want to be that more conscious leader, that person of character, have that strong inner game. What's a baby step someone could take in the next 24 hours with little to no money to start to make progress towards that?
Pick a way, and I'm going to give you a couple, but pick a way to look in a mirror. Because what do they say? The first step is acknowledging that there's something there. I'm not going to say there's a problem, because you're not a problem to be fixed. And I want to make sure that everyone understands that. We have these strengths that we've been given, and we were never developed in a way that helps us transcend and include, is the phrase. Pull on those strengths, include them in a positive way as we blossom. If you think about it like a mushroom, right? That bottom part of that circle should look like the stalk of a mushroom, and the rest balloons beautifully up above into these very conscious and creative competencies, we'll call it. And so understand that, like, these pieces that are a part of you, they're great. Like, you've been successful because these are great. Just now, over-indexing on them is causing you to get into your own way. And so a couple of ways to do that. The easiest way, just see what you think of yourself first. So the Leadership Circle profile has a free self-assessment. Do it. Just see what it says. Then if you really want
to dive, we'll link that up in the show notes for anybody that wants to take a run at that.
But the other is talk to people around you. Like, get really bold. And go to people who know you and ask, hey, they say don't ask for feedback because people clam them up. So ask for advice. Whatever style works for you, do that. But do what you can to get a mirror. Don't worry about going and buying books and all of that sort of stuff. And not yet, right?
Yeah.
Just start to get real with yourself. If you say, I want to do this more, you can reach out to Kenny. You can reach out to me. You can reach out. There are a ton of people out there who will direct you in, or point you in the direction of a coach or mentor or something, so that you can have something tailored to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because everybody's journey, there's some guiding principles, but everybody's is different and different speeds. By the way, I absolutely love that you quoted Ken Wilber on Transcend and Include. You're the only, me, you, and Rob Bell are about the only people I've ever heard say it. So, plus he has a great first name with Ken. So I'm partial.
You know someone with that name?
Maybe. Also, as you were talking about, I just kept thinking, it's like, yeah, just, it's just like Michael Jackson said, I'm going to start with the man in the mirror. I'm going to ask him if he'll change his ways. I'm about to break out in song if you're ready. I'm just kidding. So this is so, so helpful, Chris. And I know that we're probably, we have several more conversations ahead of us.
And lunch.
That will be, and lunch. Yes. Need to find a time for that. Now that I have my own vehicle again, that can happen. If anybody was like, man, I love that Chris guy's brain, and I'd love to ask him some follow-up questions or just learn more about your work or ask questions about the Leadership Circle, because I believe you're either just completed or going through the certification.
Yep. I got certified on it.
Boom. Where can they reach out to you? How do they connect with you?
LinkedIn is the fastest.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll have that link. So, all right, Chris, thanks so much for dropping some wisdom on all of us. I don't take it for granted, the hard-won wisdom that you're sharing. So this is awesome. I'm excited by it. I took some stuff away. I don't like to take notes, but I should probably have taken some notes.
You got it recorded, so that's good.
Right? But I never listen to my own podcast because I don't want to hear my own voice. So I'm going to see if my editor will get me a cut with just your parts, and it'll just sound like one half of a conversation. But to all the listeners, thank you so much for spending part of your day with me and with Chris. We hope that you found value and you were also, you got a little entertainment out of it as well. Right. If you would, like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform of choice, I would deeply appreciate it. Leave some comments. If there's something you're looking for, a topic, a conversation you'd like to go deeper on, let me know. I enjoy these. I have what some would call the gift of gab, but I want to make sure that I'm bringing conversations that are of value to you. That's why I do this. Plus, your engagement helps the algorithm find the show and put it in front of people who actually could really benefit from it. And that is a free and easy way for you to positively impact another leader on their journey. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.